It was a speedboat,
speedboat
number 13.
13, yeah.
Now, yeah. You and Mr. Arnold designed this boat?
Yeah. I came up with the idea. Ron was a very good designer.
Uh-huh.
Of course, he's considered old enough to be my father. And so he's at the wheel there. And so then we, and I come up with that idea. And he says, kid, Ron's called me kid. He says, you've got an idea there. Let's go to work and work on that thing. Mm-hmm. So we fussed around with him, more drawings and that thing. And figured out, Johnny, see, now, see, we didn't just take the boats today, you see. They threw a great big splash, of course.
Yeah. Gonna.
And so that step there was built into the boat, and somebody patented it.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and when they patented it, they were charged a royalty from Garwood, Bedard, Century Boatworks, and all the other boat builders. They all had to pay a royalty for using the step in the boat.
Then, in a sense, they stole this design from you and Mr. Arnold,
yeah,
then, right?
They got the idea. That's where it came from, of that boat there, because they raced the boat from the Grosse Pointe Yacht Club to the Grosse Pointe Lightship
and back
in Detroit. And that's where they got the idea of it.
Was this one of the fastest boats around at
that
time?
The fastest boat in the world.
Is that right? This was what, about 1903, 1904?
What about that day? What about that?
Yeah, I see that you guys got, on this one picture, you got your trial run, your speed was 37.5 miles an hour in 1903. That's really picking them up and laying them down.
Yeah, I see the engine in there. It was a six-cylinder engine, and a Stirling engine, it was called. A Stirling engine works. They let us take the engine, which we bought after a while. And they let us take the engine because they were interested in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
That is, in talking about it. And they were trying to sell me engines then. And so we had that. And that was a lot of work.
Oh, I bet.
That was smeared up with oil. And they see, they didn't have the kind of thing. We had two oil cups on there. Round about round like that there, and it dropped out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And you regulate it from here. And I fill a cap on here and you had to pour the oil there. And we were racing it here. And that is from the Blender Street Bridge to the bridge going to Saginaw. And that was into Irving.
Mm-hmm.
And it returned. And the engines of blocks, they were down there like that in a square. And bolt down here, bolt here, and over here, and over here. And on the base of the engine. And the cylinders would get jumping up and down when they started losing. So I had to be with a wrench all the time of racing, but I kept it going.
Mm-hmm.
Long to when it could stop. And says, you're going to get hurt before we get through with this here, because we're here. Well, he says, keep it going. So we won the race.
Mm-hmm.
And then they heard about that. That came out in the papers, you know, about the racing here. Well, there was other boats in the race. They're all round-billed boats.
Right. Then yours was really a different type of design. It was almost a radical design, wasn't it?
Yeah, at that day there.
Yeah.
That's all it was. Well, you see them. This fellow that patented it, I was in the hotel business, that was in 1919.
Yeah.
And some fellow came in the hotel there and asked for me. And so I went over and talked to him. He was asking me all kinds of questions that I didn't know any work with this. In the boat building business, that I'd sold my interest. And the boat building was in consolidating with the boat company. I was in Saginaw. And so when I quit them, they went into bankruptcy afterwards.
This is the Brooks Boat Company?
We were making knockdown boats. And so I did a terrific lot of work there and kept that plant going. That was our on Rust Avenue. So I got out of that game there and talked to him there. I said, tell me what you're asking me all these questions for, because I know they were getting themselves in trouble over there. And I sold my stock to Joe Seaman and got Kevin Rich. And they put us in the boat for the days. And so he told me that what he was, that he was one of the government. He showed me his card. And that the government started using in their hydroplanes.
That design?
That stuff in the hydroplane, which they use today. Right. All of them at that point. Right. And that was the start of it. And the government wouldn't pay the royalty if he wanted to have it there.
This was the guy that
lost the patent entirely.
Right.
Well, and so if I'd have been smart then,
you would
have thought I could have patented it then, because I was the originator of this. But they came up with that there. They said that Claude Arnold and Bill Shimahedy built a boat years before that there with the step in it. They were the originators of the step.
Well, from the boat building, then you went, what, pretty much into purchasing the Republic Hotel?
Well, I was in the furniture business also. And making knockdown furniture, because we had a lot of materials left.
Yeah.
See, we used mostly all oak and that there. So I went into that there. We used to burn it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I put in some new machinery in there. I knew nothing about machinery. How did I know? A kid. But I had Godlip Wurtz. We needed to think a lot of it. And he was a top engineer, a superintendent of the construction of a mill down here, right down by the 3rd Street Bridge, down there. That he took me off to it. I got some books in the bookcase over there on machinery and for putting in your line shaft and up on the ceiling that there, but it's all belt driven there. We had a large boiler room there, which was part of the sugar factory. And so I got that going, and then it got up with an idea. I've got all this here lumber here. We're burning that up, and lumber wasn't very expensive in those days.
No.
And we used to buy it for carloads. And so I put in a Liberman machine.
Now what is that?
Out there was a big piece of equipment from here to the wall along right there. And you fed your scrap timber into that there. And then you played it down the thickness of that there. And then played off the edges. And you got like your finger.
Okay.
And a gluing arrangement on the end of it, and go to work and pull that stuff down there, which is all automatic. And you go in there, the gudgeon come out with a board, 12, 14 inches or whatever
is
you want.
Is there, right? Yeah.
Set it back there, and then have it plate it down also, so you're going to have 3/4 inch or 5/8 or whatever you want.
Well,
and I start putting that in furniture, like that chair over there. So I start designing just plain chairs and tables, it goes, and mission furniture, we called it. And so we first sent out all the pieces. There were pieces of that there. And then we went working, and I changed that then. And we started to take an assembly, like the back of the chair, we put that all together, glue it, put it up there, and the legs and the seat, and make the seats there, and I put in a upholstery shop in there to make seats like that, the chair over there, and the seat there, and had upholsters working there. We got to them, and we shipped a carload of that stuff out there every day.
Is that right, to all points, or
all
around
points,
Michigan?
All over the country.
Is that all over the country?
Yeah, but they went over very big, that we went out a lot of it.
Well, you went from You went from what, an engineer, designer of boats, furniture, whatever, and how did you get into the Republic Hotel?
Well, here's what. My father built the hotel for his brother.
Is that right? Your dad did?
Yeah, he never operated the hotel, but I never had anything to do with it.
Do you remember when he built it?
Oh, I can't get that down. The first one burned.
Mm-hmm.
That there was years before that.
Was that the one your dad built? Was the first one that burned?
That'd be about 80 years ago when that burned, because I was just talking to Helen Kennedy. She was Helen Shimonetti then, George Shimonetti's daughter, and she married Kennedy, and she almost burned up in the building.
Is that right?
Yeah, they burned. Here's what started the fire. The Buck and Layton, they had a produce house there in the hotel, the first one, where the dining room. The dining room used to be upstairs in those days there.
Yeah.
And I guess I showed you pictures of the hotel there. And so they, and her, she was just an infant then in a crib. And it hadn't been for the nurse girl there that was taking care of her, running upstairs and got her, told her how she'd have burned up in the building.
Mm.
And the fucking ladies is around 4th of July, and they were also selling fireworks.
Fireworks, huh?
And somebody went in and touched off one of the firecrackers, or something. Skyrockets and Roman candles and all that stuff there they used to have in those days. It was all in the markets, you could buy that many stores. And so when that started going off, the firemen couldn't get near the damn fire. All the firemen works there blasting out, and they had to laugh at them, and the carload of them.
Well, this was when, about 1895 then, wasn't it?
Around about that there, see that there, because see, Helen Kennedy just told me that the other day. She's 80 years old now.
Yeah, and if she was an infant, it had to be.
She was an infant then, so it would be around about that time then. So it went right down to the ground, and they rebuilt it again.
Well, did your dad rebuild the second one?
Yeah, built the second one.
Okay, your dad.
Built the second one there.
For your brother, or for his brother then?
For his brother. And so, They made a failure of it. They couldn't make it pay, and all his paying my dad was $100 a month rent for the entire building. And they rented it out then. After that there, they rented it to a fellow named Mark Welsh. And that's what he was paying for dad, just $100 a month. And then Prohibition came on, that was in the 30s. And they wanted to cut the rent down to $75 a month. And I was in the business over in Saginaw then. And so I was talking with them here, and so I told them, let me handle it. So I wrote a letter to Welsh then, told him starting January the 1st, 1919, the rent would be $200 a month rent. He said, that's how, you can't do it, don't know how it goes. So he quit right there. So I had to take it over, so my dad jumped out of the meeting. Kind of, you know, as your kids, when I got me into trouble, it was right in the winter time. And he says, no, everything will freeze up here. Oh, I says, I won't let it freeze up. I says, I had a fellow in Saginaw that was interested in it, and he backed out on me the last hour. And I said, for the rent to him for $200 a month. He backed out, so I had to go ahead and take over. So I took over on January the 1st,
1919,
in a tuxedo. I'd been over to Flint or Saginaw or somewhere to a New Year's Eve party. This is in the head time. And so got her back here to the house here. And so I didn't bother changing my clothes because I was to be down there at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so I went just the way I was when I got down there. Because I didn't want to disappoint them. I'd never been upstairs at the building at all. And so I took over. But I got into a heck of a lot of things. But it got a cheap joint, that's all it was. And I had, they had people there getting a dollar a day for them or something like that there. And it was mostly by fellas that had a sweetheart, mm-hmm. using that there for a kind of a bedhouse.
Yeah.
But I wrote them all letters and told them that that was definitely out, thinking no more girls going up the rooms. I remember one instant. Charlie Ramsdell was there, he was an insurance agent. And he had a room, but not a very nice fellow. But he also had a sweetheart on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out to a ball game, I guess, or something. He came back, and I have to see this girl go upstairs. And I thought, and so I went upstairs there. Didn't have the ordinary decency to go to work and rap on the door for with me. I just tried the door and it opened up and walked in there.
Yeah, they were
as naked as the day they were born. And I ordered them out. And Charlie Ramsdell got a little bit. I remember one of the remarks that I made. He ordered me out of the room. And I told Noah, the girl jumped into the bed there and she got covered up. And that there. And I wouldn't leave until she got up and got her clothes on. Charlie said to me, you get out, I'm going to poke in the nose. I said, don't do that, there, because I said, I was never afraid of the race of a man and the arse of a woman.
Oh, God.
And so it went up. So they got their clothes on, I got them out, I checked them out of the hotel. And that's the way I had to get that place cleaned up.
Well, then you tried to run a respectable hotel. It's as simple as that, right?
No other way.
No.
Well, I cleaned out everything, all the bums and that were hanging around here. And it was an expensive job.
I bet it was.
And I had to take and buy all new furniture. I'd never been upstairs to see what was all old antique furniture. I remember that yet, too. I sold all that old furniture, the bench and stuff like that there. Some of the stuff I kept with dressers and some of them were in pretty good shape. But the beds were all iron springs. And,
mm-hmm.
And so I sold it. I remember I got $88 from a secondhand dealer in Pinconny.
For everything?
For the whole damn
thing. Oh, God.
And I had to take and buy everything from the furniture stores here to get the place going again. So that was a big job right there, but I got it, but I kept at it. I did so much, it goes on, you can chatter out of that. I made Saginaw Street what Saginaw Street then. I tried to go to work, and of course I was fighting with the authorities from the city here, and the aldermen and that there.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go to work and change Saginaw Street and make a street out of 12-foot sidewalks on each side of the sidewalk and building a two-lane road on Saginaw Street there. So I petitioned the council, go up there every darn Monday night, chew the rag with them there, but they couldn't get anybody out to Saginaw Street, and they had the hotel there, and 12-foot sidewalks, and they ordered them, got them back, and all telephone posts, no street lights on Saginaw Street, and hanging there. Well, they had a light or two up on a telephone pole hanging up there, and the pavement was all terrible. Old brick pavement all broke up. You couldn't get anybody on Saginaw Street. The Saginaw Street was
just unsafe and too dark.
They all prostitutes.
Is that right?
Yeah, more whore houses along Saginaw Street, right from 3rd Street on, right there.
Even in the 1920s?
Yeah.
Is that right?
And that's all there were there. Blacksmith shop was right across from the hotel. And that when they got that out, they got a quick building built up there for a Ford agency. And they got that out there, got all the telephone poles out, got underground cable. And the city could have saved a lot of money. I wanted them to come from Clovis Avenue right through to First Street, and which was all done by slavery. The government was paying for it.
Right.
But they wouldn't do it. Like, cut the sidewalks back and those sidewalks under the hotel, there's airway under each one of them. And that was all brick floor down in brick walls and then used right for storage and that. And then they ran to fill that all in with sand, so it cost me a lot of money. that building. That's how I got. And I got Sagamore Street. They started from Center Avenue mm-hmm. and went to 3rd Street. That's the farthest it ever went. It's still the same old way.
Same old way, yeah.
From Center Avenue going to Columbus Avenue. They still got the old telephone poles there.
Yeah.
Both sides there.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, that was. So it was quite a job. And then overtake during the Prohibition days. Of course, I wasn't used to the cocktail lounge. And so I had the pro of the golf course there. And so he wintered there. And so I let him put some driving nets in the bar there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was teaching golf there.
Is that right? Inside the bar?
Inside the bar, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Of course, there was lawn there. It was about 100 feet long or more. And so I got a driving net in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing a lot of practicing in there, too. I never charged him that big course. Just let him take it.
Yeah.
For the winter, he was there. And get his name down at the Euclid Golf Company. He was pro out there and running the club.
Well, when you bought, you know, that woodwork behind the bar?
Yeah.
Now, where was that from? Was that from one of the World's Fairs? Or?
The bar fixture there was the bar with the masterpiece of a bunch of golf calendar company manufacturers of bars. And there was a gold plate up on it. It was at the World's Fair in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad bought it over there. They put it in here. It was a beautiful bar.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. Everybody talk about it to this day.
Yes.
Every little while you get somebody to go to work and talk about that.
That picture I saw was beautiful.
And the top of the bar there, which is 20 feet long, and solid mahogany, 2-inch plank. There's a bar picture.
Must have
it was a beautiful piece of work there. It won the first prize for the prize winner at the World's Fair in Chicago. And so that made it quite a hit, and I publicized it a great deal. When we got the liquor back by the glass again, there, well, see, before that there, when the liquor first came back in, the Welchers, they were selling liquor there. They were doing a lot of bootlegging too.
Mm-hmm.
I never did any. I never sold an illegal drink for the third of my life.
Well, you told me the other Friday when I was here about that one clerk you had that was unknown to you selling.
Yeah, Leo Dardis.
Leo Dardis, well, yeah. He was selling little liquor upstairs.
They were selling it.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to finish that story with you on that
day. Well, did the Federals actually raid the place? Or
no.
They didn't. They never did?
No, they never did. No, they never got over there. Because when this fellow tipped it off to me,
this is one of the federal agents,
the
right?
Government,
yeah,
and he tipped it off to me and said that they were going to put a raid on the hotel. So I asked him for what. He says because liquor's being sold here. Well, I said you must be mistaken on that. Then talked to him about that, and he said no, they had a pretty good record of it, and so. I started right immediately, and I went through every goddamn room, and then I started up on the third floor, took one room after another, searched all the closets, and under the beds, and in the dressers, everything, one room at a time. When I got down to that room, then I showed you his picture again.
Right.
And that was Ferguson, A.P. Ferguson was his name.
This was some,
his room.
Some fell out of Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay.
I
don't remember.
But he lived right there at the hotel. He was a salesman on the road. And that room had a nice closet in it. And so when I got down to that room there, that was right in front of the elevator. That's the picture up there on the bottom. That's the old elevator.
Okay, yeah.
See, that's an open elevator. That's Mr. Shinder tonight. Sliding into that's when I converted that over into a closed elevator. And so when I got into that there, that room there, the closet, I went down to ask Leo, I said, you got a key for AP's room there for the closet? I want to get into that there. He says, no, I haven't got a key. And I didn't tell him anything what I was looking for. Never told anybody anything about it. And turned around and tipped it off to me that there was bootlegging going on there. But he knew that I wasn't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, no, I didn't have a key. That is a keyhole lock, where the key in your keyhole in there, put your lock in there, lock it up, and you can't shove another key into it. And he said, no, he didn't have any. And I said, I want to get in that room. And so I said, I'm going down to get a pinch bar, and I'll take the door right off the hinges.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, maybe I got one. Maybe. I just happened to think of that, that he might have left his key here. I'll go down and look. He came up with it. He had it all the time. And he let that door open there. I just piled right up to the ceiling. Beer, wine, whiskey, right up to the sea, a whole truckload of it. This is it.
My God.
And so it belonged to Leo. It was his. I got rid of him afterwards.
Well, you had the hotel to what, 1965, right?
1965, sold the hotel in 1965.
Yeah. So you had it during Prohibition, during World War II, during Korea,
yeah.
During...
All of that. I went through all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you always have, after you cleaned it up, did you always have good clientele and pretty steady?
Very good, the best.
Is that right?
We talk about it to this day.
Well, you people served really good food there, I understand,
well,
too, didn't you?
I served nothing but the best food. As far as me knowing anything about the dining room or food or anything
mm-hmm.
like that, I had to go to it and come up with all those ideas myself that
yeah.
changed the the whole atmosphere of the place.
Yeah.
And such as in the cocktail lounge, I carpeted all the floor in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the dining room, I put in a terrazzo floor in there.
Mm.
Beautiful.
I bet that was beautiful, man.
Yeah, and all the furniture in that room. And served nothing but high grade food. And in the kitchen the same way, I had to put it all new equipment in there. But I run it my way of doing things.
Yeah.
I think I got a lot of compliments on it from everybody in the city. And it took a hold. And I showed you some pictures of the pastor that I had.
No, my
that was the leading hotel.
Yeah, I know, my dad.
Because the Winona Hotel was slipping.
Yeah, I know.
Paul Scherz, the golden thing.
Yeah.
He was slipping over there. They weren't doing the business.
I've asked my dad,
yeah.
if he'd ever been to the Republic Hotel for dinner or for otherwise, and he said, yeah, that he'd been there for dinner, a number of occasions in the 50s and the 40s. Yeah, he said the food was delicious. He said it was a fine hotel.
Nothing but high-grade food.
Yeah.
And the prices were right. And I made a profit out of it. But I didn't do any of it. First did some advertising in the paper and that there.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to work at day and some television pointing out $5 for a minute talk,
Mm-hmm.
I said, the heck with that. I'm just going to go to work and take and reduce the price of my food. What I'm going to work and pay out for $45 for a minute's talk on the television. The food, the atmosphere, pay for it. It's
themselves,
for publicity.
Yeah,
you know.
That was wise.
So that's the reason the people started coming over there.
Yeah.
And I hired all very good help. I had some of the best cooks in the country. And so, and I served all those things, such as lobster, crab meat, and all that stuff very expensive. And all the elite. I didn't go for the riffraff at all.
No, well, that's obvious by you cleaning the hotel up.
And so I got that all out of there in nice shape and got and my crew and I paid big wages and I had a strike.
Oh, is that right?
And 30 days.
Oh my God.
I had a picket line around the hotel. That came about and I went out in that deal.
When was that? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't get the date of that anymore. And that was,
well, how did you get by with everybody on strike? Who did the cooking and who did the serving?
Well, because, see, it was this way here. A kitchen crew, it wasn't...